tonight. We're back in our series, and it's been very difficult being apart from trying to finish up and put some closure to our series on biblical courtship and pursuing lifelong relationships. And my attempt to do that will be this week and one more message on engagement. Tonight is simply titled Ready for Engagement. It's really a series of questions and things that are appropriate to ask when you have been involved in a relationship of courtship, in pursuing the possibility of marriage. You're going to come to a time when it's either, you know, time to cut the line and move on, or it's time to move on in the sense of, hey, this is a fish on the line that we want to keep, and let's reel it in and let's get married. And it's important that we kind of come to that place where it doesn't go on for eternity as far as trying to pursue biblical courtship without being willing to pull the trigger, as it were, and come to a place of decision. So I want to ask God's blessing tonight. And again, this is more along the lines of just a wrapping up discussion on biblical courtship and relationship than it is a sermon. And so I believe it's valuable. I believe it's profitable. I'm not apologizing for it, but I just want to bring clarity as it is distinct from biblical exposition or a sermon that is brought on a typical Sunday morning and evening. And I think that these types of series are very important to our church family. I want to remind you, and this is something hard for people to grasp because we're so used to just marching on with what we're used to, is that my desire as a pastor and as a pastor of a church that really does believe the Bible is that we would realize that the things we're trying to instill are culture changing for the culture of our church. They are looking forward to say we as a body need to be willing to approach things differently because they're biblically right, because there is a need to change the philosophies that have been adopted by the church from the world and from the culture, and we need to have a culture shift in the church, and that we'd realize that as a church family, we're going to be different, and as we pursue this further and further along, we're going to grow in wisdom and maturity about how to approach things. Right? You ever begin something new in your family because you knew it was right? You knew it was biblical. You've come to the revelation that I need to do X, Y, Z. This is what I need to do. And yet you realize 10 years in, you do it differently than when you first started because you've matured in it. And I think without a doubt that in 10 years, if God will allow me the life and the breath and the opportunity to minister as a pastor, that if I bring that a series of messages again on biblical courtship, which it is one of those things that you have to remind and rehearse, as God told the children of Israel to rehearse things that they don't forget them. Right? There's not when we study the scriptures, there's always things that God will reveal to us that is new to us. It's not new to the scriptures, but it's new to our understanding. But there are many things that we need to have rehearsed over and over again because we have grown soft in an area, or we have failed to follow through in an area, and we need to be reminded of those things. So undoubtedly, there's a need, you know, 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, to teach on this subject again and approach it again. And I guarantee you that at that point in time, it's going to look differently to some degree or another, because there will be a maturing of that biblical philosophy, just like there has been since really I became a pastor and really early on took a burden and approach to relationships that is different than our prevailing culture with the serial dating, if you will, in our culture, that there has got to be a different way, a different philosophy than what I experienced in my own life, and knowing it's fraught with road mines and all kinds of difficulties. And it's not that biblical courtship is without
complexity and difficulty?
It is. It's because you're dealing with sinners. You're dealing with people. Not just the other family that has problems. You, beloved, have problems, right? Your family has issues. The other family is going to have issues. Your daughter or your son has issues, and their daughter and their son has issues. We are sinful people. We are people who need the grace of God. And so just saying that, I'm already thinking about undoubtedly there's going to be a maturing and hopefully changes that would be helpful 5 years down the road. Though the core, the essence, I think, of what we have discussed won't change. There will be some addendums to it. The likelihood of in 5 or 10 years of more than a few of my children going through that process is probably going to change some things regarding perspective on things, right? I will write from prison the things that are needful for us to understand, to learn, and to grow in. And so it is important that we understand those things. Good, all of that was not recorded. That's wonderful. There's no incriminating evidence unless they had the pulpit mic on. So we know that things are going to develop, right? Things are going to grow. And I hope that from the beginning of this, there has not been the feeling like he's telling us everything we're supposed to do. And if we don't do it that way, then we're wrong. Though there are principles, there are biblical truths that need to be applied. But let's have a desire as a church community, as a family of families, let's have a desire to mature and help sharpen one another as we change the culture of our church. Let's not have the first time a courtship doesn't work. Here's an example. Let's not have a church fight and a family feud. Let's have a great, wonderful, blessed working through difficulties and realizing that it is better for people not to marry who aren't supposed to than it is for us to just go through so that we have a successful courtship. Right? It would not be successful if it was a marriage that ended that was not supposed to take place. Let's not take offense to these things. Let us seek to follow God's plan, and let's seek as a church family to be prepared to be a help to others. I think that's something that as I've approached this and just really tried to lay out the fact that we need to be all on board as a church family. Your personal family may approach things differently, but we can't have the prevailing philosophy of the church or the things that are taught by the pastor to say, hey, we need to approach things differently, and then several of the people trying to promote and encourage 14-year-olds dating. It just doesn't work. And I know that I can't control that except for in my own home. Let's have a heart to say we all want to do something different. And in 20 years, you think about the outcome of that. In 20 years, when our children who have been involved in biblical courtship are having children that are getting to marriageable age, things of that nature, 30 years from now, I know it's hard for you to think beyond that because you're already wondering when tonight's going to be over and you're thinking very short term. Right? But this is a reality of how we need to think as Christians, is what's going to happen down the road. I know somebody here is bound to say, well, I believe Jesus is coming back. I hope he does. But in the meantime, don't stop having a long range vision and a long range plan for what God has for your family. Lots of people have failed their families or failed to walk with God the way they should because they didn't have a long-range look, because they assumed Jesus would return before the end of their week. Right? That's you will not find anywhere in Scripture, not one place, where you will find the ideology that is practiced by some that, nothing matters how we do it because Jesus is going to come back. That's quite the opposite. Jesus is coming back. And in the meantime, here's a whole lot of things we need to practice. So I just want to encourage you that it needs to be something that as a church community, as a church family, we embrace and we desire to have a long range look to say, hey, in 20 years, this is going to look different. In 20 years, there's going to be children's children We already have in 10 years children that were 10, 11, 12, 13, and now they're married and having children in the church, and they're still here and they're serving in leadership capacities and they're ministering, and it's just a wonderful thing. But what's that going to look like 20 years from now? When we've matured, when we have grown in our understanding of these things, it's going to look different, but it's going to be a good kind of different, I believe. So tonight, my visit with the pastor, my fireside chat, whatever we're going to call it, is ready. Are you ready for engagement? Are you ready for engagement? This is not going to be my last lesson will be on engagement. This is, are you ready for engagement? If we remember in the mindset, the things that I've been teaching, that courtship is something that should not be entered into without a desire or a serious possibility for marriage. It should not just be, you know, Christianized version of dating. It wasn't for us. No, but it should be looked at with very serious purpose, and yet at the same time, it's not the same thing as engagement. It's not the same thing as betrothal. It's not, you know, you need a writing of divorcement to get out of this. It is a stage of investigation that will have a flow, if you will, from getting to know you, and maybe early on you realize this is just not going to work out. That's the best time for that to be done. But as you mature in that courtship relationship, and you're bringing people parents and pastors and wise counselors are investing in you, and you're seeking out a deepening relationship with that. As the possibility for engagement and marriage is really more and more a real possibility, the relationship has to get more serious. In the sense of, not in physical involvement or those types of things, but more serious in the things that you talk about. And I believe there needs to be communication about a lot of things. I'm going to speak of some of those things today. It doesn't mean the first time you get together, you have to know all the dirt in their life. Right? You may not ever get to the place where you need to share that. But early on, there needs to be, you know, obviously talking about things that matter most in your life. Is there a possibility? Is there an interest? And I'm not going to rehash all the things that we've gone through on the cornerstones of biblical courtship. But tonight I want to ask some questions, and these are not new. I've gotten a lot of different resources, and some of the basic questions are the same in multiple resources. And so if this sounds familiar to you, if you've read many books on biblical courtship or counseling, or, you know, pre-marriage counseling, you'll find a lot of these things are similar. And of course, I'll add my own unique touch to it. Maybe I shouldn't, but I will. Here are some questions regarding, are you ready for engagement? As courtship relationship ensues, you need to ask a question that's very important, probably the most important, is that in that relationship, is God center of the relationship? Is God's glory truly preeminent in the pursuit of courtship? Because if it is not, and it is in danger of not being, there is a form of idolatry that has taken place in a relationship. Christ demands preeminence. God wants to get glory in his church, and he wants to get glory in and through our lives. And one of the things with regards to the importance of this is that if you're in a biblical courtship and you started out on the right foot, but if you've become infatuated with the individual so much so that you have forgotten God, you are not going to have the biblical sense and the biblical wisdom to make right decisions. Right? Men, listen, a woman can make a wonderful friend, a wonderful companion, a wonderful love, and as you are married, a wonderful lover, but they make terrible gods. The same is true with men. for you ladies. A man can be a great leader, a great help, someone who is a wonderful friend, a great the love of your life, a lover in marriage, but they are terrible gods. They're tyrants. This is important before you are ready for engagement. To evaluate and ask yourself, is our relationship centered on the gospel, centered on Jesus, and centered on the glory of God? It is one of the Ten Commandments not to make things as idols. In Exodus chapter number 20, it says, "Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them. For I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing mercy unto thousands of them that keep my commandments." The command before says, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." Listen, if you think it is out of line for me to say that, ask yourself what this world makes gods of. And you will find gods and goddesses that involve relationship all throughout human history. It is important, as you're pursuing the relationship, to keep God first. To love Him with all of your heart, soul, mind, and strength. To not forget that Christ, as we looked at the very beginning of the series way, way back there, that Christ was to be before courtship, and that you're to walk in the Spirit, and so that you won't fulfill the lust of the flesh, that if we follow just biblical Christianity, we will be more prepared to make right decisions in pursuing relationships. But if we put that off to the side and we focus instead of on God and His glory and God and loving Him above all else, if we focus on a woman or on a man in a relationship, that you will get off course in a hurry. You will desire to please them rather than to please God. That's what idols always do. They draw your affection away from the Most High. Colossians 1 and verse number 18. Colossians 1 and verse 18. Actually, I'll start in verse number 15. It says, speaking of Jesus Christ, who is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of every creature. For by Him were all things created that are in heaven and that are in earth, visible and invisible, whether they be thrones or dominions or principalities or powers. All things were created by Him and for Him. And He is before all things, and by Him all things consist. They literally hold together. And He is the head of the body, the church, who is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in all things He might have the preeminence. Do you remember Diotrephes in 3 John? He loves to have the preeminence. There is no one, no thing, no spouse, no future potential spouse that should ever have the preeminence in your life over Jesus. None. Some of you need to evaluate that right now. As a married man, as a married woman, has your spouse taken that place in your mind and your heart of preeminence over Jesus? Then you will have a hard time fulfilling all the commands given to you to submit to your husband as unto the Lord, right? I mean, how do you love your wife as Christ loved the church if Christ is not preeminent in your life? You can't do it. And everything will be askew. You need to put and make sure that God is at the place of your focus. I would say this. If He is not, then you need to back off on the courtship and put your focus back on God so that you can see rightly, so that you can see clearly. It is a big decision to pursue marriage. It's a long time. Don't let temporary blindness, even though I do tease about it sometimes, oftentimes in relation to praying for temporary blindness that a young lady would accept the proposal of a young man, but that's, you know, for just other reasons. But that God would never be out of focus is vitally important. Secondly, Are you ready for engagement? I think there needs to be a question, an honest assessment, and in that process of assessment, seeking out wise counselors that you have pursued for their input on regarding your relationship development. If you have been involved in a courtship relationship, you have to ask yourself, is your relationship growing? Is it marked by spiritual growth? Are aspects of your relationship maturing? Or is your growth stunted? Are you still like you were when you first were involved in the courtship relationship? Is it still just giggles and grins and kind of embarrassments? Or have you really gotten into the meat of what life is about? I think that there are different aspects that you need to determine because, again, marriage is a long time. And it can be a wonderful long time or it can be just a very, very long time. And that's the honest truth. If that wasn't the truth, then you know, there wouldn't be marriage counseling. Amen, Pastor Eddie? Right? There wouldn't be lots of time spent helping people who really aren't happy with where they're at in their life and marriage. And they were the ones that made the decision to be in that relationship. Okay? Is your relationship marked by growth? And let me give you some different areas. First of all, friendship. Friendship. We've talked about the importance of this in previous times and previous messages. But you have to ask the question, is this somebody you enjoy as a friend? You know, without getting into too much graphic detail or anything, but not very much of life is spent in the bedroom. Most of marriage is lived in the life of relationship, in the life of friendship. So you have to practically say, is this is not just somebody that I'm attracted to in a physical kind of way, in a sexual kind of way. This has to be determined. Is this somebody I enjoy being friends with? Is this somebody that I can look forward to, you know, walking through the store hand in hand? Is this somebody that I enjoy going to spend life with? Now, I know that you don't know this person in the detail that you will after you are married, and that will deepen the relationship, deepen the friendship, but there will be a basic knowledge when you're involved in a courtship. If this is somebody that you may like them, you may respect them, but you may say, you know what, we really just don't click. Right? You understand what I mean? There's just not that gelling together. There's not that feeling of this friendship is easy. It's not that friendships aren't ever tested and don't have difficulties. I mean, the friendship is easy in the sense that we enjoy being together. I can think of different brothers. We became, as we would term it, fast friends. That there was a gelling together of friendship. And it was not something you had to work at. You didn't get the call and say, oh, do I have to spend time with them? Right? You don't want that to be the feeling you get with the person you're courting. If it is, it's time to say, enough. It is finished. For those of you who are being too serious right now, you have to understand some of this stuff is like, we already know it's true. Right? This is not the last train leaving town. This is not the last ship leaving port. Right? There will be God's best for you if you're patient. You want to make certain that in relationship development, you can see yourself for a long, long time being a friend in a very daily setting with this person. And one of the things that can spoil this, and this is why purity in relationship is so important. Many of us in this room can unfortunately attest to the fact that we did not follow this plan. And though we were friends and we enjoyed one another, there can be things like physical involvement that can detract from that friendship because the focus gets put on something prematurely where the relationship, the friendship hasn't developed as it needs to. So keep your heart and your mind and your life pure. Pursue a friendship before you pursue any type of physical relationship that should be after marriage. Right? If the friendship works, then the other part you don't have to worry about. I was at a wedding for a young man, Peter Montoro. And Peter, if you're listening to this, I didn't ask permission. But Peter is grown up. He's the eldest of 11 children or 12 children in his family. His parents have been church planters in Queens, New York. I've had the privilege of preaching at their church. And we've had a relationship for some time, a friendship. And he just was married, and I had promised him that I'd be at his wedding. And so a couple of weeks ago, I flew out to New York and went to the wedding. It was a beautiful wedding, and they had never even held hands before the day of their wedding. They had never kissed. They had never been involved in any physical kind of way. And it was at the reception that I leaned over to one person. I said, "Well, it just goes to show you that you didn't have to practice to figure it out pretty quickly, that physical affection in relationship, right? They had no problem after the first kiss figuring out how to do it again." And the waiting was worth it. There was a purity and an innocence in it. And there was this just kind of lump in my throat to pray that God would give that same kind of experience to my own children. It's something beautiful. It's something holy. And it's something that, quite honestly, when we follow God's plan and we wait for those things and you've developed the friendship, it's going to come pretty naturally. There needs to be good friendship. Secondly, communication. Are you able to communicate with one another? Do you seek to understand more than just to be understood in the relationship? That's something that we as married people all need to remember. I need to do a better job at that myself. To seek to understand rather than just to be understood. I'm pretty good at making my point. But there's a lot of you that are the same. It could be you as the wife. It could be you as the husband. You're pretty good at making sure your point is made. Right? It can be a hard thing being married to a preacher. Right? When you're dealing with a difficulty or you're dealing with a problem, and it's like, well, here's the resolution in Mark chapter number 15, verse number 2, and you give an alliterated outline to the problem that she just wants to talk to her friend about. It can be a difficulty. And my wife says amen. She's just saying it inside. Communication is key. Now, this does not just mean, 140 character text messages. Communication. It doesn't mean trivial and trite things in a relationship. I mean the kind of communication that when you even in a biblical courtship, you find things that maybe you disagree on, you find things that are different about one another or perspectives that are different, and then you have to talk about them. You have to communicate about them. Are you able to bring things to resolution? There is in premarital counseling, one of the four causes of divorce that I bring up is communication. A lot of marriages end because of a lack of communication, because what matters is not talked about. So in a courtship relationship, do you avoid talking about things that are serious? Because you've already learned that talking about serious things brings immediate conflict, then you're not ready for marriage. You're not ready for marriage. You have to talk about tough things. Life is filled with tough things. Life is filled with things you have to communicate about. And if you can't communicate without immediate offense, you're going to struggle in your relationship. Relationship development also includes your spiritual fellowship. Are you growing together in Christ? Has your relationship increased your love and fellowship with God? Or has it been detracting from your spiritual growth? Are you a better Christian because of the courtship? Or are you a worse Christian because of the courtship? Is your relationship with God growing in grace, or is it shrinking because of the courtship? If it ends on the negative side, that's saying something about the relationship. The relationship is drawing you away from Christ, not drawing you to Christ. That's not a healthy thing. That's not a good sign for what's up in the future. Young ladies, remember this, and you've heard me say this before, and you've probably heard others say it, is that if you think that you're going to change him when you get married, and he's not leading you spiritually, before in a biblical courtship relationship, his lack of a relationship with God is drawing you away from God. If you think all of a sudden when you get married, you're going to revolutionize him, you're going to change his perspective on all things regarding God, you are sadly mistaken. It does not work that way. But by the grace of God, it rarely works that way. Your spiritual fellowship is important. Is it a relationship that is enhancing your walk with God? Number four, in this regards to relationship development, and I don't want you to run with this in the wrong direction, but romance. I'm not encouraging the kind of romance that is dealing with physical romance in regards to courtship. But it is something, and it's probably the thing you have to deal with the least, but it is a reality. Is this somebody, the more you get to know them, the more you can see yourself being romantically involved with them? I don't just mean sexually involved with them. I mean romantic. This is somebody you are growing to love in this courtship as it gets closer and closer to the time of engagement. I think it's fair to say that if at the time when you're about ready to say yes to marriage, you should probably know whether or not you can love this person. Seems reasonable to me, does it not? And I know you're not to just fling your heart out there to love everyone and everything that comes along. But when you're in that relationship process and you're getting to the place where you've been growing and maturing in that relationship, do you find yourself attracted to this person romantically? That is a part of the relationship. Is this somebody who you can't bear to look at? Do they give you, even if you say they're a quality person, they give me personally the heebie-jeebies? If that's the case, don't pursue marriage. Right? I'm not putting it all on that, but it is a reality. There needs to be that affection. The problem with our culture is it puts everything on that. The problem with the dating culture is that it puts everything on, oh, she's good looking. Who I'm attracted to her. And ladies, your attraction should not be one in a sexually enticing way. Your attraction should be in the beauty of your person. Of who you are on the inside and on the outside. How you carry yourself. How you take care of yourself. Yes, those things are a part of the package. It is not wrong to be romantically attracted to somebody that you're just about ready to ask to marry. In fact, I think it would be healthy. It's a good thing. I know these things seem really simple, and those are probably the things you don't need to say, but don't put too much weight on this. Don't put all the focus here. You may think somebody's romantically attractive, but you've had a hard time developing a friendship, you have no communication, you have no spiritual growth. That's not good. The problem with physical attraction, the problem with romantic attraction, is we change. And if there's not more than that in the relationship, then it will likely fall flat. It's a reality. We need to make sure that we have a right biblical aspect of relationship. So, God, ready for engagement. Is He number one? Is He the preeminent thing in your life? Has He been dethroned because of the courtship? Number two, relationship development, friendship, communication, spiritual fellowship, romance. Number three, do you have unity with regards to biblical roles? Biblical roles. There is a prevalent... let me rewind. With regards to biblical roles, do you believe in them? The reality is, a lot of Christians today say, oh, I believe the Bible. I love Jesus. And you talk to them about the biblical roles of manhood and womanhood. And they say, well, you know, that's antiquated. That was for that time. That's a cultural thing. And we're in a different age. We've been in the age of, you know, we have had the liberation of women and now everything is good. You need to make sure you're on the same page. Because the reality is, if you get married and you have different ideas, one of you has the idea of biblical roles in relationship and the other one does not, they have worldly views of roles in relationship, you are going to have constant and immediate conflict. I'm talking about wedding day conflict. It'll start in a hurry. It'll start the first time you're both sitting around wondering when dinner's going to be made. And it's far more than that, but there are things like that that can be, you know, evidences of what our roles in relationship are. In Ephesians chapter number 5, we find scripturally the roles of biblical relationship. We find the roles of man and woman. And it begins with this, a willingness, and I've already preached and taught on this before, a willingness to say, as I head into the marriage relationship, I am going to be willing to submit myself to do my part. To fulfill what God has for me. It says in Ephesians 5 verse 21, submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of God. That I'm submitting to my wife to fulfill what God has called me to do. And in this passage, what follows, what God has called me to do is to sacrificially love her as Christ loved the church. And she is to submit to me to do what God has called her to do, which is to submit to me as her covenant head, as her husband, even as Christ is the head of the church. She is to submit herself to me as her husband. If you do not have those same biblical values, you are going to have World War III. Do both of you fully embrace the biblical roles that God has ordained for men and women? We have to understand something. You remember back when we talked about the importance of the equal yoke relationship? There's something we need to take into real account in our day, is that many people who call themselves Christians, many people who maybe truly are born again, they've met Jesus, they have absolutely, totally rejected God's biblical view of manhood and womanhood and family. They'll have nothing of it. Their pursuits are just the same as the world. Husbands that are willing to say, hey, my wife has her own life and I have my own life and we're just glad to be married and we enjoy, you know, she's pursuing her career and her vision and her goals and I'm pursuing my vision and my goals and my... That's not a biblical marriage. That's not a biblical philosophy of life and working together as one. If you're going in two different directions, it's going to eventually draw you apart. You have to understand something today. The high divorce rates within quote unquote Christian marriages has something to do not just with the fact that worldliness has gotten in there in the sense that they're all committing adultery, but a lot of times marriages end today amongst Christians because they have not embraced the biblical roles of men and women in the relationship, and they are living like two ships passing in the night. They're living different lives. There have been times and seasons in counseling people that have been in this church in the past who've made choices because they both wanted to pursue careers, that one would be working during the day and one would be working during the night, and every third weekend they would get to be together as a family, and that's what their choices were, and it's not a good thing. You have to determine in this relationship whether or not you both have the same ideology, the same biblical philosophy of the roles in the relationship. Do you embrace the Bible and His God's ordained purpose for men and women? To put it in practical terms, let's say you do embrace those roles. Ladies, is the man you are in a relationship with the kind of man that you will cheerfully submit to as your covenant head? In other words, do you respect him? If you don't marry him. Men, are you already seeking to lead in your relationship? I know this is going to be one of the hard things in being a dad with daughters. Is that as a courtship relationship matures, and especially as it begins into engagement, but even leading up to that, there's going to have to be a more and more leadership allowed for the young man that's going to lead my daughter. And she's going to have to respect him enough that she wants to follow his leadership. You know the problem with what happens with young boys and girls dating is that the hearts of daughters are stolen from young men who have no business leading. And they don't know how to lead. They just know how to steal. But when it comes to a time of biblical courtship, when you're developing that relationship, there's going to be a process of he's going to need to take more and more leadership as far as doing things. It doesn't mean he's super, he is now in charge and the father has no say. That's not what I'm saying at all. But there's little things like, trying to help her and spiritually leading and things of that nature to take opportunities to show he has a desire to be a leader in the relationship. Are you seeking to lead, or are you unengaged and just going with the flow? Right. What about your perspective on family? This is something that's been a topic in our home even as recently as yesterday. Are you like-minded with perspective on family? Now, I know I'm pretty blunt and I'm pretty bold, and we love people. We're glad that you're here and in the church. But I believe the Bible's resolutely clear on the blessing of children. And I don't make any apologies about it. The reality is in our culture, even in our Christian culture, children have become thought of as something that is a burden and not a blessing. Something that is, well, if you have a few, that's okay. But if you have too many, then, what are you doing? You need to think about your life. And really what it says is Christians are saying we're just as selfish as the world is. The philosophy and the burden that I have for families is that men and women, when they get married, they would learn to trust the Lord. Trusting the Lord doesn't mean the same result for every person. Trust in the Lord with regards to family can mean that some people have one child. Some people have no child. Some people have 11 children. Those crazy people. But the reality is, we think that we can step into the place and play God just because there's availability to do so. And that's going against what the Scripture teaches. I am amazed, and I know Pastor Eddie would concur with me on this. I believe that is one of the things that probably is very, very clearly seen from Genesis to Revelation. It's nice to have somebody that you think will agree with you, and if you don't, just keep it yourself. All right. Something from Genesis to Revelation, God is in control of the womb. Aren't we fearfully and wonderfully made? Does He not open and close the womb? Does He not bless with children those like Job who've had all their children taken away? Is He not the one in control of life? Right? Then why is it that all of a sudden Christians in the last 100 years especially have bitten on to the philosophies and the ideologies of the world that says I'm going to govern and decide what my family is going to look like? I'm going to plan it myself rather than trusting the Lord. Do you realize that when you do that, you've just followed wholeheartedly the plan that was brought about by people that you would despise? As far as their perspectives and views on life and marriage and family and racism, there is much like, I'll bring it to modern day perspective. Who would have ever thought that we would have to vote on referendum 74 in these United States with her Christian background and heritage? But let me tell you how it happened. People were focused. People that hated God, that hated marriage,
and they had all their efforts and energies put into changing the hearts of children. It would not have happened. We would not be in the place we are in today with regards to homosexual or same-sex marriage without the indoctrination of children in the public school. Period. And it happened by a purposeful agenda. You say, why are you bringing that up? Well, it has to do with why our perspective on the family is different. There were people in the education system, humanists like John Dewey. You maybe have heard of the Dewey Decimal System. Leader in education, person who hated God, hated everything good and godly. Margaret Sanger. She is the founder of this little institution we know as Planned Parenthood. Sounds so nice, doesn't it? They're the largest providers of abortions in the world. Do you know what her ideology was? That she would... She hated Jews. She hated blacks. She wanted to eradicate them from the world. And one of the ways she was going to do that was through abortion, and the other way was through contraceptive. And her plan was that Christians, Jews, and blacks would totally be annihilated through Planned Parenthood, Planned Parenting, contraception. Things that Christians before rejected, that they would take. And now, the sad truth is, many Christians have gone to the place where they're just following, without question, the ways of the world, even so much so that they use abortification, contraceptives that can abort children in the womb, because they don't want to have a child. I've had conflict with Bible college faculty, deans of students at independent Baptist colleges because of their counsel to young people getting married that they have no business giving, that you should take the first 5 years of your marriage and not have children, just get to know one another. Do you find that in scriptures anywhere? No. Say, well, how will we get to know one another? Well, God will give you at least 9 months. Right? And it's wrong-headed thinking. Listen, it's wrong-headed thinking to think that after you have a child, you can no longer get to know one another. No, your relationship matures and develops. But what about those people who get married and they want to have children and it's years before they ever do, or they never do, and they've trusted the Lord just the same? Is God not in control of that? One of the things on the other perspective, on the other side, and I could get carried away because it's important. But if you're going to marry somebody, you better be on the same page. You're a young man and you desire a family, and you marry a young lady and you realize she's even doing things behind your back because she wants to keep her body looking good. Those are the kind of things that if you don't deal with them up front, you can deal with in a very difficult and a hard way. Because there's not natural affection for children, which is one of the signs that God gives us for the end times. And we as Christian people need to have a different perspective. I was saying that the other extreme on the other side is this philosophy of some people who think we have more, so we're more spiritual. I hope that not one person in this congregation could ever say that Pastor Houston and his family and the way that they've presented the biblical plan for trusting the Lord for children, that anybody has ever been made to feel like you're not spiritual or you're not loved because you don't have as many as we do. The people who have that philosophy, we're going to have as many as we can so we can be the most spiritual, they have a wrongheadedness in the other direction. We're not in a race. We're not in a competition. We're not trying to better somebody. We could have just as if it was the Lord's plan, just as easily been the ones that had two children, and that was all the Lord ever gave us. Some of our dearest friends in Astoria, when we were training for the ministry, they had one son, and that took several years to have that son. And 11 years later, they had their second son. Never, ever, ever trying to prevent that. And you know what? They're still within childbearing years, and it's been probably 11 more years, and they've not had any more children. and they would welcome them. So you need to have those kind of discussions before engagement. Okay? Now, I'll say this. You don't necessarily have to have that discussion on the first time you get together to discuss the possibility of courtship. But it doesn't have to be very long after that. Those are the kind of things that need to be dealt with up front. And you may have those things really early on with families. Now, I didn't give you a whole lot of scriptures because I've given those many times before, but even just one of them, Psalm 127, children are inheritors of the Lord. The fruit of the womb is His reward. As arrows in the hands of a mighty man, so are children of thy youth. Blessed is the man who hath his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies in the gates. Nobody ever looks at the book of Job and gets to the end and says, I can't believe it. He already had 10 children. Why would God give him 10 more? Why would He punish him like that? No, that was the joy and rejoicing of his life. And I believe the reason why he wasn't given double like he was given everything else is because the children that had passed on were the only things that had eternal value in life. They had the possibility of being with him again in eternity. Everything else, his lands and his herds, the things that don't have eternal significance, they don't have eternal souls, they were given double. But the children, he was given 10 more, and he loved them. And his daughters, it says the three of them were the fairest in all the land. And he wasn't going around kicking things saying, I can't believe we had another child. But that's the philosophy that's taken on by so many. And if you're going to get married to somebody, you better make certain that their view is a biblical view and not a worldly view. That their biblical view is a selfless view to say, whatever the Lord would bless me with, I would take. And not a selfish view to say, I don't want it interrupting my life. How about the burden to educate your children in a distinctively Christian way? That's going to matter. It would matter to me a lot if my wife was not on board with wanting to train up our children in a biblically distinct way. Those are real discussions. And I know when you're 20 or you're 21 and you're kind of, woo, you're thinking this could be the one. Some of those things might not be on the forefront of your mind. But they will be. I'm not talking fast enough. In all of that roles, you need to ask yourself the question, can I imagine, in a healthy way, the woman that I'm interested in being the mother of my children? Or if you're the young lady, can I imagine the man that I'm interested in being the father of my children? And if you have question marks and red flags coming up everywhere, listen to the Holy Spirit of God. 7:29. We need to wrap it up. I've been... We need to wrap it up tonight, but that would mean I have three more. I have another one after this. Let's pause. And I know I'm in a hurry to get finished with this because I don't want it to be, considered the Pharaoh series. He won't let the people go. All right, it's the series that doesn't end. It's like the Energizer Bunny series. But we'll come back to this and look at a few more aspects of before you get engaged, things to consider. But these ones that I've given you tonight, that God would be preeminent, that the relationship would be obviously developing, and that it's developing in a natural way without great difficulty. Not that you don't have to work at relationships, but it's not constantly a burden. Like, I'm trying to make this person my friend. I'm trying to communicate and it's just not working. But you need to walk through those things in honesty, and that we would have a real, honest And not only an honest conversation, but an honest understanding that we have sameness in our biblical perspective of men and women's roles and on family and on the things that, to be quite frank, are going to matter a lot in your future marriage. We need to have God's mind on these things before we ask for someone, for a young lady's hand in marriage, and before you say yes, you need to have those things nailed down. Let's go to the Lord in prayer tonight, and I meant to have question and answers, but we don't have time for that, so we'll do it the next time.